Welcome to the Health Policy Research Consortium podcast, a product of the Health Policy Research Consortium, a CTIS program, your weekly podcast empowering communities to use policy as a vehicle to improve their health and learn how to mobilize your community to create positive change where you live, work, and worship. Wait not a minute more. It's time to get started with the Health Policy Research Consortium podcast.
Welcome to the Health Policy Research Consortium podcast. I'm your host, Patricia Terrell.
And our guest for today's episode is Dr. Kara Odom Walker. She is the Cabinet Secretary of the Delaware Department of Health and Social Services. Dr. Walker is going to tell us everything we need to know about the Children's Health Insurance Program, also known as CHIP, and the health policy implications in the Mid-Atlantic region, which includes Delaware, Washington, D.C., Virginia, Maryland, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. Dr. Walker, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's get started with public policy and health policy so that our listeners can understand exactly what this means. How would you explain public policy and health policy in terms of what you do with the CHIP program over at the Department of Health and Social Services?
Public policy to me means the interaction between what we do as public servants and leaders and the intersection between deciding what to do with resources that need to be deployed and impact families and children. I think in terms of the Children's Health Insurance Program, the health policy issues are broad. We really are trying to figure out how to leverage the economic resources, but also make impacts on access to health care, to policy, to how we're evaluating and understanding where we can make people and kids healthier.
So tell us about the CHIP program. Exactly what is it?
Well, the Children's Health Insurance Program is a part of our Medicaid program, and it provides health care coverage to low-income children and those with moderate families, as well as for pregnant women. So it's really important for us to be able to lower the percentage of children who otherwise would be uninsured and unable to have health coverage.
And so what got you interested in this area of business? What's your personal interest?
My personal interest is that, for background, I'm a family physician, and I know that in the healthcare system, it's so important that we provide people with access to healthcare. It means that more kids are getting their vaccinations, more kids are getting access to healthcare, and really promoting the healthiest lives that they can have in the long term. And we have a huge responsibility to do that in our country. And for sure, making sure that people are covered, that women who are pregnant get care early and often promotes better health for an entire lifetime. And that really is what we should be investing in.
So tell us, what does CHIP mean for the health of Delaware's children, especially children of color, low-income families? If you have statistics, or what do we need to know about the outcomes and the impact?
In Delaware, our current enrollment of kids is about 8,300 children and families. And we know that in Delaware, we have a population of almost 1 million people. The total annual cost for CHIP is about $30 million, and our state share is about $2.9 million, or almost 9%. And we are really struggling to make sure we have enough funding to get through January 2018. I know that we are also watching what happens at the national level, and fortunately, CHIP was authorized in 1997 with bipartisan support under President Bill Clinton, and it was instrumental to lower the percentage of children who were uninsured from almost 14% when it started to 4.5% in 2015. We know that this reauthorization is really critical. It last occurred in 2015, and we are well past the deadline of September 30th, 2017. Nationally, I think all of the neighbors around Delaware are facing the same challenges. CHIP covers about 9 million children in the country, and for fiscal year 2016, the total spending was about $15 billion, with obviously a share between the federal government and states. I know that in our state, it's even more critical for those who are from minority backgrounds. About half of all enrolled children in Delaware in the CHIP program are identified as a racial and ethnic minorities, and we know that it really is a program that provides that continuity of care for when families are transitioning, maybe on private insurance and then Medicaid, and then maybe need access on the marketplace. But we really do want to provide that full benefit package, including dental coverage. We also have particular health challenges in Delaware, and not unusual to other places nearby like Washington, D.C. I mean, Delaware has a very high infant mortality rate. It's highest in our city of Wilmington, which has really concentrated rates of poverty, especially among African Americans. So when we're trying to tackle issues like high infant mortality in the state, we know that other places in our state, like in the southern and more rural places where we have a large Hispanic population, we really do have to provide those critical connections. And CHIP is really a main lever that we have to provide those connections, not only for kids, but also for babies in their first year of life who are maybe born at lower birth rates. We also really need to ensure that we are providing this care because of the consequences of the opioid crisis and how it affects all of those in Delaware. We're seeing high rates of an increase in the number of babies who are born substance exposed. And certainly addiction isn't discriminating, and so those births are spread across all races, but certainly for those who are low income, CHIP may really provide that lifeline to connect people and connect babies and connect families to treatment. So we are working very hard. The CHIP program and Medicaid program are integrated seamlessly in Delaware, and both of these are administered by our Division of Medicaid and Medical Assistance. We have an integrated single point of entry for eligibility, and we also are enrolling them into integrated managed care benefit plans. So families may not even know that they're on different programs. It really does feel like a unified effort. And for me as a policymaker and a public health professional, it means that we have the opportunity to look at what is impacting families and provide better access and care for all kids in our state.
Now, I think I heard you mention that you're struggling to make sure that you are funded through January 2018, which is a few months. Did I hear that correctly?
That's correct. We are too quickly approaching that really challenging funding situation. And right now, we are happy to say that delivery of care has not been impacted, but we certainly are watching very closely. And, if federal funding does not come through, as I said, there's a share between state and federal resources, but the majority of the funding comes from the federal level. So we have to ensure that we are going to, as a state, take on the opportunity to prevent lapses in coverage for people who most need it. And I am not pleased with the current version of the bill that has been put through. Although there is bipartisan support, everybody seems to think it's important to provide coverage for children and pregnant women and their families. But when you are talking about low-income families and those who are most likely to fall through the cracks, things like shortening the grace period for premium payment and terminating health insurance when someone is a month late is unacceptable. If we're talking about denying health care to pregnant women and children while billing issues are being resolved, that's unacceptable. If we're talking about slashing funding for vital public health services that go to health departments and Centers for Disease Control, that is unacceptable. And certainly if we're talking about increasing Medicare premiums for high-income enrollees, that is also truly a irresponsible thing to do. And so despite the fact that there was a House commitment to pass CHIP and the Community Health Center funding, I really hope that the Senate takes on a more moderate approach to ensuring that the CHIP program and Community Health Center funding is more adequately supported going forward.
Have you ever known the CHIP program to be threatened to this degree ever in history?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And that is really what I just cannot believe. We're in this position of waiting and waiting to see what will happen. We obviously will have to think about exploring alternative funding opportunities, but states like mine in Delaware, we cannot scale back. And so there is likely to be a huge negative impact on health outcomes. It is really just unbelievable that the House and the Senate have not moved forward and allowed this deadline to pass.
And just give us an example of what the worst case scenario could be if funding was not received at a level required.
We may have to go as far as finding alternative coverage. We would have to encourage families to go to our already stretched, thin, federally qualified health centers who may have to take on sliding fee scales and take on more of the cost of care. They may be showing up in emergency rooms with large health care bills. And even worse than that, and irresponsible of all of us, is that families may just show up in the emergency room when care is avoided for far too long, and we have major challenges connecting families with providers. I mean, we've done a lot to overcome the huge numbers of uninsured in our state and other states, and I would hate to see us move backward, particularly for our kids and most vulnerable babies.
Does that mean that someone could be denied care in an emergency situation?
It does not mean, fortunately, we have protections in place to ensure that everyone gets care when they show up in an emergency room, but emergency room care is just that. It's for emergencies. It's not for providing preventive care, regular immunizations, getting well child checks, or for making sure babies have the things that they most need. And what we know, what I know as a family physician, is particularly for kids, there are so many things that are preventable that we really do need to get kids in when they're well to be able to prevent the long-term consequences of many what would otherwise be routine conditions and care.
And so why do you think this is? You hear so many situations where our hearts melt for women and children, but yet we have a situation where it seems like they don't care about women and children in this instance. Why do you think that is?
I think it's unbelievable that we've allowed partisan politics to interfere with the things that we know are just the things that are right to do. I mean, it is heartbreaking to imagine the kids and families who may not get care when they most need it. And every one of us, every legislator knows that this is a really critical program, but we're allowing these partisan politics to get in the way and start to negotiate around resources and funding at a time when people need health care. And, you know, we're not talking about providing better services. We're really talking about coverage and finances, all for a negotiation game that I just think is sacrificing the health of people who are hardworking and deserve to have access to care.
Yes. And so it may be an issue of two, and correct me if I'm wrong, where there is a mindset that health care is a privilege and not a right?
Unfortunately, that is a position that many politicians have taken. And what is unbelievable as a physician is that no matter what, and no matter what coverage someone has, you have to do the best to treat the person in front of you, whether they have an insurance card or not. And we're not going to deny it, and we actually require all healthcare facilities to provide some level of treatment, particularly in emergency department settings. So it really does hurt my heart to think about what we're doing for people who don't have a card, but particularly for children and for pregnant women who we know are the future. So why are we investing poorly in our collective future, where any one of these young people could end up being the next president or the next leader? We're somehow encouraging this cycle of poverty that isn't helping any of us.
Now, I know you're speaking on a national level, and of course, in Virginia, we're having an election, and in New Jersey, we're having an election. Are there controls that are available at, like, your level in terms of what you can do or cannot do that may have nothing to do at the national level when it comes to funding or any other programs you want to implement?
We are very fortunate at the state level to have some flexibility. But when it comes to millions of dollars, those dollars do not exist. And we just came out of a state budget deficit of $400 million and had to negotiate how to cut things like needle exchange and rabies control and make choices about covering for dental care. These are all hard decisions. And my neighboring states and colleagues are facing the same very difficult decisions. It is critical to have the governor's support behind this. Our governor is definitely a leader and champion for health care. We are working very hard on payment reform initiatives, and we're trying to follow the model of other states like Maryland and Pennsylvania nearby, where they are taking these challenges on in healthcare costs and growth head on. But it is very challenging to think about real levers that we have when we're actually talking about cutting millions of dollars from a program that we know is providing critical services.
Okay, let's talk about what we can do at the individual level to make a difference.
We need people to speak to their legislators. We know that it is critically important that citizens' voices are heard in how it impacts them. The public showing up to town hall meetings, calling their members of Congress, writing notes, gathering in the halls, we know that that is critically important. We have to hear those voices. CHIP is a smaller piece of that larger debate about health care, but we know when it's affecting 9 million children, it really is serving other families and others. And whether your child has been served by the CHIP program or not, we need to make sure that people are making their voices heard.
And of course, voting is so important, right? I mean, more so at the midterm elections than even presidential. So tell us why those midterm elections are so important for voters to get out.
Absolutely. We have seen that over time, it is unlikely to have as great a representation of voters showing up at the polls, and so we encourage everyone to vote. Everyone to vote, and politics are local, politics are meaningful in your neighborhood and communities, and you have to vote whether it is a bigger election or not. And I just hope that everyone will show up, and the more you can get legislators who are informed on the issues, who can represent you on the issues, it will make all of the policymaking much more informed and collective and representative.
And for people who want to learn more about the CHIP program, where can they go?
They can go to the Kaiser Family Foundation website. There's also a great report on the Casey Foundation, or many of the national organizations right now have wonderful resources. But you can also just reach out to your legislators, and they have a great local information for you about the CHIP program and about the healthcare debate right now at the federal level.
Okay, because it affects everyone. If it affects one population, it affects us all, right?
I can't underscore that enough. I mean, whether or not you have received CHIP or Medicaid, the healthcare debate affects every family. It affects everyone's premiums, everyone's deductibles, everyone's potential to pay greater numbers of co-payments and shared directive payments. So we have to figure out how to make that real for everyone, whether it feels like you're enrolled in one of these programs or not. The healthcare debate is a shared and collective responsibility that we all have to feed into and share our experiences with our legislators.
Well, maybe once we get the congressmen and senators to have to pay for their own health insurance, maybe they'll understand, perhaps.
I like that.
Thank you. So is there any other key takeaways or anything else you want to share before we conclude?
I just want to underscore that the connection to care for children is the responsibility of every person. So please, if you're listening, make your voice heard. We cannot afford to allow 9 million children to slip through the cracks because of lack of leadership in Washington. And even if your legislator is supportive of CHIP, please call them anyway, because they need to hear from you and know that you support this. If children lose health care under CHIP, we know that health will worsen, our population health will decline, and we will all pay the consequences in both the short term and the long term. So I cannot underscore the need to speak up loudly during the health care debate. And I know we're all getting fatigued with it, but it is not the time to be silent.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Walker, for just sharing all of this great information about the CHIP program and how we can help you be effective. And we're definitely going to have to do more to look out for our families, our children, and women. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Patricia.
Thank you for listening to the Health Policy Research Consortium podcast. Remember, you have the power to use policy to improve your picture of health where you live, work, and worship. For more information on the Health Policy Research Consortium podcast, visit our website at www.hprc.info and like us on our social media channels, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr.
The research and information that we report during this show was supported by the National Institute on Minority Health and Health Disparities of the National Institutes of Health under award number 5U54MD008-60802. The content is solely the responsibility of the authors and does not necessarily represent the official views of the National Institutes of Health.